Main speaker, Brent from Dana Point. Brent. Hey, everybody, my name is Brent Walton. I'm an alcoholic. Happy to be with you all. I'm going to thank Greg for inviting me out. I love this group, and I love so many of you in here. Right? We're doing this thing called Life Together, and it's messy. It's real messy at times, but I'll tell you what, I would not trade this way of living for anything, right? For anything. I have a sobriety date. It's February 12th, 2013. I have a home group. It's the Blackburn Only Men's Big Book Study. We meet Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. in San Juan Capistrano, so all of you men, come talk to me if you want to come and check out a really good Big Book meeting and a fantastic meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor, and then I'm plugged in, and I sponsor men and women. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you hear nothing else from me, I love Alcoholics Anonymous and this way of life. Whew. Thank you, Isaiah. How what, Isaiah? Like, Isaiah. I've known Isaiah for a little bit, and he is a changed man. Thank you for coming out and having dinner with me before, and I enjoy having you in my life too, right? What are you all doing here? Like, I mean, no, for real, what are we doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? Are you here to stop drinking? I hope so. I hope you stop drinking, because if you stop drinking, something else is going to happen. Suddenly, problems that you didn't know you had are going to emerge. That's what's going to happen if you're an alcoholic, as described in that book, Alcoholics Anonymous. New problems are going to emerge. And then you're going to treat one of them, and guess what? More is revealed. Another problem emerges. And another, and another. And another, and hopefully while you stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and practice these principles laid out right there in the steps, you're going to be able to treat those problems as they emerge. As they emerge in real time and in life. And hopefully you're going to treat them in a different way. You're promised the drama of life still. I know it's really disappointing to a lot of us. I don't want the drama of life. You are promised the drama of life. Hereafter, you are promised the drama of life. With the application of the steps to your life and the principles embodied in those steps as a practice, you can become happy, useful, and whole. That's the promise in the foreword of the 12 and 12. Along the way, it will expel the obsession to drink. Or any obsession, because that's what it treats. It treats the second half of what we have. You know, you all know, you walked in these doors. If you don't know, somebody else already knows, your family member, your spouse, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, like your siblings. They know you have a problem with drinking and or using. They know that. They watch you, and they're telling you all the things that make no sense. You should really stop. And we say, fuck you. Right? Like that's the defiance in us. You can't tell me what to do. I already know I should stop at end stage alcoholism, at the chronic stage of alcoholism. I already know I should stop. I'm trying to stop. Can't you see I'm trying to stop? Am I drinking? Can't you see I'm trying to stop? And yet people insist on telling us the opposite. And we spend a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous talking about your powerless over alcohol. Like, no joke, that's a fact. You happen to be powerless over everything. You think you have control over your body, right? Congratulations, you're delusional there too. You think you have control over your actions, you're delusional there too. You think you have control over your thoughts? What a delusion. And I'll operate in life as if it's not, which is double delusional, right? It's a fact. How many of us just, got up today, right? I and you're telling and a little chit-chatting, and you say, yeah, I got up today. I did, you know, I say it all the time. I say it all the time. Yeah, I got up today. I did this. I did that. I said a few prayers. I did a few things. Yeah, I got a morning routine, right? I did it. I did it. I did it. How many I's are in there? Oh, where's the thank you for the 9 trillion cells in your body that's cooperated to just open your eyelids? I'm taking credit for that. I am. I'm taking credit for that without giving thanks at all for the breath. I know when I was in the disease, fully in the disease and drinking heavily, the prayers were very different. God, another day. Fuck, I don't want to be here. Can't stand this world. It'd be okay if you take me. I don't want to live. I can't stay living like this. And for all your newcomers, my prayer for you is I hope you're desperate. That's what I found it. I found it necessary to be desperate, despired, without spirit. But if you come on in and conspire with us, you might gain a little inspiration, and hopefully that'll happen before you expire. And you'll be entered into this thing called life. And it becomes magical. Really. I am powerless over everything. It's a fact. It doesn't mean anything more than that. I am animated, as are you, and as are you, by a power far greater than yourself. And it might behoove you, it might benefit you, to just get closer and closer and closer to that power. That's breathing you, breathing me, beating my heart, beating your heart, and putting you in life. This power moves planets. The spheres really have their music. Bill Wilson talked about it. It's moving planets. It's moving stars. It's breathing you. It's breathing me. And I'll take credit for all that. Just like that. So the main problem centers in my mind, not my body. The main problem is not the substances that I'm putting in my body. The main problem is, what the hell am I thinking and doing sober? Those will drive me back to need relief from all my thinking, thoughts, and running the universe. It just gets overwhelming to me. I'm full of anxiety, fear, crushing ideas. You're not behaving the way I want you to. They're not doing it right. The judgment machine is ramped up and running wild. And I need relief for me. And the only thing I know that can provide it and give me oblivion, which is the target point, is to pick up. The main part of this disease centers in the mind, not the body. We have an allergy. Man, acknowledge it. Yeah, I drink a lot more than people should. And you know what? My drinking, unlike most people, turns out makes me thirstier. It's like, what? Drinking makes me thirstier. Say it to yourself. Drinking makes you thirstier. And it's like, oh my God. No, normal people, the others in this world, drinking quenches thirst. It's like, what? How does that happen? So I'll get into this. And my job today, tonight, I think, is this: to share me with you. That's really my job, is to share me with you, to tell you a little bit about my past so that the newcomers, old timers, who care, we're sort of the forgotten bunch, right? Like, it's like, the newcomers, maybe you can identify and see something. Isaiah gave you a great introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sure loads of you identified. I identified with Isaiah and what he was talking about. And if you identify with us, we come prepared, armed with the actual facts about this thing called alcoholism, that we have a way out upon which, crazily enough, most all of us agree. Like, isn't that miraculous in and of itself? Like, we can agree on anything. We can agree that we have a way out upon which I can actually enter life, live, and be with you. Because if I can do that, if I can meet you where you are, and I can be me and you can be you, God is in the midst. And we see it. And then it's like, oh my God, I can't unsee that stuff. I can't unsee that stuff any longer. What? All right, so I'm a Utah kid, right? I was born in Provo, Utah. Man, we come from a long stock of Mormonism in my family, right? I got a brother Mormon over here named Kelly. It's like I have one side of the family like settled Salt Lake Valley with Brigham Young, and I got this other side of the family that settled Moab Landing and Bluff and found the southern route down. And they, you know, raised a bunch of Mormons. I got cousins and everybody up and down the Wasatch Front, state of Utah. And we don't drink no matter what. I'm not supposed to be a drug addict, alcoholic at all. We don't drink no matter what. And that's how I was raised. We don't drink no matter what. Now, along the way, I had ideas about what the universe was supposed to do for me and how God's supposed to treat me. And I'm getting programmed and raised and indoctrinated in a religion. I'm being taught this stuff as a good kid. Loving mother, loving dad. And I come and I'm at the age of 6 and I got certain ideas. And guess what? One of them wasn't fulfilled because my dad died. Natural causes. Now, if natural, if you mean he's a, there's a lot of sister wives in my background, in my family. It's like, he died of a hereditary disease born of incest. You cannot share that with your friends. Like, I'm already selfish and self-absorbed and self-centered enough, but you certainly can't tell them, yeah, my dad died. Oh, yeah, what was it? Oh, incest. You know, like, hey. This is not the plan, according to 6-year-old Brent. Immediately after that, though, my mother surrounds herself with a bunch of people. She goes and gets an education. My mother became a lawyer. She made a lot of money, had a real successful career. Leave that aside. I also became a latchkey kid, and she needed other people around. So the man that she brought in was an old Vietnam vet, maybe an alcoholic, maybe not. But here's what he did. He liked to torture little boys. He played prisoner of war. He physically tortured us. Not the church, not the police, not my mother, not anybody believed Kirk and I. That's my brother. Gene leaves us one night when there's violence and he gets hauled away. He then just stalks us. Because once again, this is just the time period. I don't know the evidence. I don't know what happened, but we're stalked. And I am living in fear. The home has not been safe. Another instance of what happens in my childhood, and this is not in any way to suggest this is the cause of alcoholism. It's just what happened to me. The babysitter was a mother in the ward, and she liked to rape little boys. They didn't believe us. Nobody did anything, et cetera, et cetera. The next man that came into my mother's life and into my life was a man named Ralph. My mother married Ralph. Ralph Sinalki. I loved Ralph. But Ralph was a blackout 4-day drinker. Okay? That meant he drinks one day, the next 3, he's in his underwear doing a Thorazine shuffle, engaged with you, and not remember a goddamn thing. And I think I have a relationship with him. For those of you who are parents and were drunk, your children think they're having a relationship with you. They're not. One day, Ralph does the thing that we all do. He passes out, only this time he was smoking in bed. The cigarette caught the carpet on fire. The house caught on fire. The house burned down, Ralph died. I need a drink, and I haven't had one. I need relief from this world. It is not safe. Mother can't be trusted. church isn't doing what God's certainly not doing what God's supposed to be doing. Only person I can count on in this whole world at that time is my mind and my brother. Or so it seems to me. And this is what we suffer from, a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I have alcoholism long before picking up. I am that self-absorbed. Rightly or wrongly, it is my perception of the world and my interactions with you that is telling me this. And it's not safe, and I've got to do something. And I'm good in school. I've got all kinds of abnormalities in addition to that. Not only do I have a psychiatrist, my mother is paying for good, great mental health treatment. I'm getting the excellent mental health treatment. I have been institutionalized. I've been treated since the age of 8. They thought I was a suspect in pipe bombings in Salt Lake City at a time. those church pipe bombings. I'm like considered a possible suspect. Like I'm weird, okay? Like I'm weird. And I'm smart. And I'm excelling at school. People are cheating on me. And I'm small and short. Like I'm the kid up front that's a foot shorter than everybody else, right? Awkward. And I wet the bed. So I am awesome at your house, right? Like the slumber party is so good for a kid like me. I'm the alcoholic. Not my brother. I'm the alcoholic. My brother is not. He grew up. I didn't. Real simple. So at about the age of 16, I'm with Ray Wells. Ray and I got our driver's licenses roughly the same time. He's driving, so I'm assuming I'm roughly 16 years old. He's taking me, Brent, you want to go to a concert? We go to a concert. He pulls in, goes to the parking lot, reaches in the back. There's a brown paper bag back there. There's some California coolers inside. I don't know what those are, but he goes, would you like one? And I said, yes, I would. No thought, no nothing. I don't even ask if there's alcohol in it. Do you want one? And I'm like, yes, I would. No consideration of the possibility that we don't do this as a Mormon kid. No peer pressure, no nothing, right? Unscrew the top, and then something magical happens that night. And I know some of you build up to crossing an invisible line, and I can tell you I crossed that line that night for sure. Because here's what happens to a guy like me when you put alcohol in this body. It takes about 15 minutes. And suddenly all the thoughts and the voices in my head, the volume goes down. And that self-absorption, self-obsession, selfish, self-centered, mind and thinking becomes a workable volume, and I can breathe and I can interact with you. Ray took me to a punk rock concert. Now I show up in khakis, penny loafers. I got pennies in them, right? I have a white shirt on, it's buttoned all the way to the top, a little bow tie, and a sweater vest, and my cute little Mormon haircut. And I had the time of my life with people I don't belong with, till my head would tell me, and none of that occurred to me. Not any of it. I don't belong here. What do I say? How are you? You're looking at me. None of those thoughts that would preoccupy my mind during every day at school as I'm watching out behind my back. Is the bully coming? Is this happening? How can I do this? Right? None of those thoughts. Gone. And I'm breathing, and I'm laughing, and I'm in life at last. And I didn't even know I wasn't in life until I had this drug called alcohol. I had no clue I was not in life. And I'm in the mosh pit, and I cannot ride the roller coaster. It's like, I'm like Zoe size, you know? And you're elbowing me in the face, and I'm getting you back in the groin, and it's the time of my life. I woke up the next day battered, bruised, and hurting, but I've been through that. The pain was nothing. I'm going to go do this again. Right? The only thing different I did is I went to the bishop, and I go, Bish, we need to change the word of wisdom because we need to drink more. And my bishop said, Brent, I don't think that's going to happen. The word of wisdom is the word of wisdom of the church. And I made the reasonable decision. I left the church that day. And that's a reasonable decision for an alcoholic of my type. Because you cannot take away from me that only thing that has allowed me to be in life with you. I hate sobriety. I have an abnormal reaction to life naturally. And I need something to treat that mental state, because I can't be here with you right here, right now, anywhere. The doctor looks like restless, irritable, discontent when sober. Unless treated at once to get that sense of ease and comfort that follows by a few drinks. Now, unfortunately for us, or maybe fortunately, I don't know. The doctor's opinion, one thing about it tells you he's not an alkie. He's just a doctor treating us, observing us, giving the facts about us. He's reporting back the facts about us. And how do you know he's not an alcoholic? Because there's the most understated line in the whole big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. Yeah, I like pudding. Fucking love the effect produced by alcohol. When you like something, you can take it or leave it alone. I'm not leaving this alone. No way, no how, not ever. Because it gave me a life worth living that night. And that's spiritual. That's a spiritual experience. And I'm going to do it again. And all I can tell you is that I kept doing it. And it was great. I had a blast continuing to do that. I pursued alcohol. I pursued other drugs. I pursued anything that the effect would be similar to that. Allow me to be in life with you. Allow me to be here with you, because sobriety, if you knew how I felt sober, you would never ask me why I drank. Eventually, though, what happens as we pursue this, right? I don't actually find the rooms and sit all the way down until the age of 44. I got 28 years of doing this, thinking I can find a way to get the right chemical combination, the right amount of booze, the right amount of whatever combo to get me back in life when the alcoholic is starting to betray me. The alcohol is starting to betray me. Right? Because I can't keep doing those things. Suddenly I'm not as in life when drinking. I'm not as in life coming to. I'm not as in life when these things 10 years in. But I get an idea. I know what's going to make me happy, joyous, and free like the booze did, right? This is about the age of 28. I'm going to go get a career. So I do. And I think this is the linear pattern that my brother's pursuing, the linear pattern that all the people around me are pursuing. You go do this, check. Your life will improve. You'll get better. You'll be happier. So I go get a career. I didn't get happier. And the booze is ceasing to work as well. Man, I had a great legal career fueled by cocaine and alcohol. And at the pinnacle of my career, I am at the United States Supreme Court at counsel table. This is a big deal for lawyers. And I cannot walk up those marble steps in Washington, D.C. without first downing a bunch of vodka beforehand and having a bindle tucked inside my shoe to go have a bunch of spiritual gaggers in the bathroom. At the height of my career, where I'm supposed to be the proudest of the lawyer I've become, I'm seeking oblivion still. And really what I'm doing is seeking the ability to still be in life, because I can't. I'm afraid. I'm anxious. I'm weird. Like, I'm like in my head misbelieving and mistaking my thoughts and ideas as life. And in case you haven't figured this out, it's a fact. If it's in your head, It's not in life. It's in your head. It's not in life. I know, it's crazy. Like, if I imagine it, I think it's actually in life. If I'm remembering something that happened, I swear to God, it happened just like my mind remembers. No, it's still there. In fact, the worst witness is an eyewitness. We can get them all made out to be liars. But I operate as if that's real. And I keep on operating that way. Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. The dynamic of me relying on my mind and self is still there. I get a new idea. I know what's going to fix me. I know what's going to make me happy. The career's not doing it. I need to get married. This is what's going to happen, right? Like, let's go get married and make the family, right? Let's get married and make a family. Well, the first wife didn't work out because, you know, I'm an alcoholic. It's just practice, right? The first wife is always like, fuck, practice. Like, nothing happens with that. And I'll tell you what really happens. I spend about 3 years thinking it's going to improve life and I'm going to feel better about myself and the way I'm in it and I can at last be with you and all these things. And the relationship lasts. I love that we describe these things. The relationship lasts 7 years, but I can promise you the relationship did not last 7 years. I'm in it maybe two, giving it a wholehearted effort, and then the next five is how do I get out? And I'm not really in it anymore. My head and ideas are starting to invade and bomb me with thoughts and notions, and I'm not in a relationship. I'm in a relationship with my ideas, and that's as far as I can get. And then I'll judge you according to how well you measure up to my yardstick, my ideas of how well you should behave, what you're supposed to do, what I'm supposed to do, and all the shoulds that are in my head and not in life. So I divorced that one, and then I think it was just the wrong person. Naturally, it's the wrong person. It's not that it was a bad idea I had. I know that marriage will make me feel better and more alive and all this stuff. It's not a bad idea. It was just the wrong one, right? So the second one I get, and it's like I go marry the coke whore. Sorry, Denon, that's my son. But your mother was. And she's going to do this stuff with me. We're going to live this life, man. We had a $5,000 a month drug habit. Okay? Like, we are living life and living large. And I think I've arrived. And I'm getting further and further away from being in life. The alcohol and the drugs are ceasing to work as well as they did. Right? And I'm now getting bosses, partners, upset with me. I'm now getting other people upset with me. The wife, either one, they're upset with me. I know the solution. I got a guy. Isn't the solution next? What do you do next? Let's bring a child. This is the linear life. This is what I was taught. This is how to be programmed to live happy, joyous, free. Let's go get a child, okay? So we bring a child into this world. And here's what happened. I delivered my firstborn son. There are two. Denon is his name. He's in the audience tonight. I delivered him. Natural birthing tub, 12 hours of labor. I was present right there the whole time. Sober. I hadn't had that experience ever. I saw the face and the breath of God. It was spiritual. I love my son. Delivered a beautiful, healthy baby boy. Was kind to his mother. Cut the umbilical cord. Held him. Cried. A real life experience. So. And that spiritual experience lasted 3 days. Until there's vodka in the freezer. And I got drunk again. And all I can tell you is that at that point, the drinking took on a whole new desperate angle. I was dispirited. I was sure that the love I had for my kid would keep me sober. I was sure that the love that I had for my children would put me in life and allow me to be free of whatever's going on. Because I need to have a new experience and a different experience in my relationship with life, or I'm going. And I drank with a new obsession that started to piss off his mother. We started to get CPS called because I can't actually be and have a relationship with you. I have a relationship with my ideas, and when you're not behaving, there'll be consequences. And when I'm not behaving to hers, there'll be consequences, and it's going to get ugly. I didn't know that that's what happens in life, but that's what happens if you're involved with an alcoholic who has alcoholism. That means they're self-obsessed, self-absorbed, selfish, self-centered, and they can't have a relationship with you. They have a relationship with themselves, and they're wholly self-reliant. Just facts. And I can't see them. At about 3 years of this, it dawns on me. It wasn't the bad idea to have a kid. I know, let's have two. It's still a good idea. My head was telling me it's still a good idea. Have more children. You remember what it was like when you held Denon? It was spiritual. This is what you need, just more of them. If you have two, you can love them and you won't drink anymore. Because at this point, the bosses and my partners are upset with me. Everybody's upset with me. I'm no longer able to perform in the way I was. The excellent life that I've been building up was now starting to come down, just like it's described in that book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And so we do it. We have a second. And as beautiful as that first experience was, and I hate this part, the night of delivering Tesher was one of the worst nights of my life. I couldn't be there. I mean, I physically was there, but there's a big pile back at home. There's vodka in the freezer. I'm well supplied there. I got nothing here but this loud fucking bitch who can't push out that child quick enough. And she's hurting me and she's hitting me and I can't be there for her. And I sit there and we go through this and all I'm thinking about is what's at home, what's at home, what's at home, and all the time goes by and what's at home and I need to get home. I need to be home. I need to be home. And then suddenly there's Tesher's head and it's like, get out. And when my second baby was born, I split. Because that's the kind of dad I am. I don't know if I cut the umbilical cord for Tesher. I don't know that I even really held him or appreciated the miracle of childbirth that had happened right in front of my eyes, and I'm sober. And I couldn't be there to hold my kid. I went home and I got loaded. Because I can't be with me. Denon's mother did a really reasonable thing. 3 days later, I was served with divorce papers. That's healthy, by the way. That's a very reasonable response to a man like me in this state, a full-blown chronic alcoholism. There ain't anything my children or anyone can do to treat what I have. Get out. And that's what I did. I did urban camping for a while. And then I went to treatment. And I went to treatment. And after treatment, they had introduced me to AA. And at AA, I did nothing. Oh, no, I got a sponsor in name only. Like, I picked the young guy in the room that was talking a good game, you know, sort of like Byron, right? Like, and I went up to him and I said, will you be my sponsor? Right? And he said, yes. And only what this guy didn't know was I wasn't going to listen to a damn thing he said. I wasn't going to read the book with him. Fortunately, he didn't really read the book. I didn't even know there was a criteria, right? I didn't listen to anything he said. And by the way, he believed in little marijuana maintenance. And I'm all pretty much okay with all of that at this stage of my life. And here's what happens when you're not treating alcoholism with anything. Restless, irritable, discontent. Suicidal ideations, come on, because I didn't sign up for this. This is now miserable again. This is goddamn fucking miserable to be in life. At the same time, my partners asked me to resign, which was a nice way of saying you're fired. And everything's coming down, and don't you know, I know it. The whole facade, charade, all of it was going to come down, and I am overwhelmed. And I can think of only one solution. I think it's a solution. It's a solution. It's absolutely a solution to no longer to expire, to no longer be on planet Earth. Sounds like a real viable solution to a man like me. And you know what I did? I drank. I was not my thought. I wasn't going to leave my kids fatherless. Like I was. I will tell you that alcohol saved my life at 16. It saved my life again that night. It saved my life. I 5150 myself. They had the wisdom to turn it into that 5250. And, you know, my delusions included thinking that the nurse had the hots for me, right? Like this. And I now started drinking. The houses get foreclosed on. They just let us out of that stuff. They just let us out. They let us out to roam freely among society. I mean, this is crazy. Where do you all go eventually? Well, here. You all show up here when they just let you out of those asylums. And this is where who we are. Because we're the ones that still rely on our thinking. We're the ones that haven't found anything other than self-reliance. This is as much as the design for life as I'm ever familiar with, and I just didn't know it. My judgments. And each one of my judgments has separated me from you and you from me and me from life itself. As long as I continue to act upon them. It was 3 more years of just drinking desperation that I'd never known even before. I couldn't hold a job. The houses get foreclosed on. Just like Bill and Lois, we're now living with the in-laws in Missouri. Misery. It's a podunk tiny town. There are more moonshine stills than people. Not a stoplight, no nothing. And grandma is raising my kids. I don't want to live here, and I'm not going to live this way of life. And for 3 years, I did nothing but hit the vodka bottle that's in the freezer and come to and continue to just hit oblivion. And I hate myself and I hate life. I hate what's become of my kids. I hate what's become of my marriage. I hate everything about all of it. I'm living to drink. The DTs are on. Dry heaves, all of it. End stage alcoholism. And then one night, it was winter, it was February. I thought of my dad. And I said, fuck it, I give. Dad, help me. I said it out loud. Turns out that's a prayer. Turns out that's a really powerful prayer. I meant it with every fiber of my being. And something changed. I think the most common word for God is something happened. Something happened. Something new happened where I got an idea. I phoned up my mom. Mom, I want to be sober. Can I come live with you? My mom lives in Dana Point. She says, yes, it's a sober house. Great. I abandoned my family. I used to say I just left them. I'm going to get some. No, I abandoned my kids. Sorry. But I abandoned my kids to go get sober or die. My mom, being a good Al-Anon, she had a man waiting for me on my arrival, right? He took me to an Al-Anon meeting Monday night and an AA meeting Tuesday morning. Hardcore Harbor, thank you. Hardcore Harbor meeting in Dana Point Harbor. It's not really around anymore. And I detoxed in the room with those men and women. And they took care of me. The men drove me to meetings. I'm the guy that couldn't remember anything. I mean, those of you who identified as new, congratulations. I have no idea if I identified as new, nor do I know what I was doing, right? Like, I'm the guy that brings a blankie to the morning meeting. And I'm rocking back and forth, and I may have some drool and not know. Like, I'm that guy. I don't know what's happening yet in life, but I'll tell you what, I'm not drinking. And you guys are hauling me to 3 to 5 meetings a day. And one of them was this meeting when it was at the YMCA. And at about 35 years of sobriety, I took a 3-year chip right up there. Like, and you guys gave it to me and you let me give a birthday doc. And you clapped for me and said, keep coming back. I know today not one of you believed that I had 3 years of sobriety. At 3 years, I did go back to the YMCA meeting, this meeting when it was at the YMCA, and give a real 3-year pitch. But that night, you men and women were behaving like alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous, showing love to the newcomer who doesn't have a clue of how to do this. And you walked up to them, and there was nobody saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. You all just said, keep coming back, and I'm glad you're here. Keep coming back, I'm glad you're here. Keep coming back, and I'm glad you're here. Shortly afterward, I got a sponsor. My sponsor told me to get commitments. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get commitments. I go get commitments. One of them was stacking chairs. I had like 8 commitments. I'm doing like 20 meetings a week. Like, I got commitments here. I don't even know what's going on. I'm just getting distracted while the miracle's happening and I don't know what's going on. But at one of these commitments, I'm stacking chairs. It's the Aragon speaker meeting on a Friday night. And the speaker made me laugh. I felt in life again that night. Went up to thank him, and it turns out it was the lead singer of the same punk rock band that first night I got drunk. My muse at drinking, and now my muse in sobriety. Fucking Jack is like, holy cow, like, here's... The universe has my attention. I don't know what you do with the attention that the universe gives you. I hope and pray that you take the actions as outlined right there in the steps. Because when you practice these steps as a way of life, it will expel the obsession to drink. It will render you useful, happy, and whole. But they must be practiced and implemented in your life. It doesn't do any good for them to remain in this book that you probably haven't read. It doesn't do any good to remain on the page. It doesn't do any good to just read it and put it in your head, because your head is not in life. Can you practice it and put it into your life? The steps are a set of principles, spiritual in nature, that when practiced as a way of life, applied again and again and again, practice, render you happy, useful, and whole. Right? And I don't know anything about that because, again, I'm self-reliant. Everything remains in my head. That's nice. I'll consult self again about what to do. I read it. I'll consult self with what to do. You know what? I'm going to consult another alcoholic who's also self-reliant. And we will decide what to do with self. At no point am I getting God-reliant. At no point am I going prayer, action, prayer, action. And no point have I actually fired the manager. The application of step one is to fire the manager and never ask yourself what to do again. Never? Yeah, never. You are powerless over everything. Oh, wait, I think you have power. You are operating as if you have seeming power. You are again operating as if you have seeming power every time you consult self and are self-reliant. That's not the facts of life. The universe is breathing you. It's beating your heart. It's beating mine. And it's animating everything around you. God has no grandkids. All of you. All of you are perfectly imperfect in every way. And together, whole, we make something that's magic, really beautiful. And when I become God-reliant and rely on this power that's actual, for real, and in real time, I can be with you. And that gives you an opportunity to just be with me. And God is there, right here, right now. Love you all. Thanks for letting me share.